Our next presentation is by Dr. Yanni. Her interest in community health nursing began in her early teens when she made home visits with nursing nuns. Later as a nurse manager for the Visiting Nurse Service of New York, an offshoot of the Henry Street Settlement, she often visited the home office located in the brownstone owned by Jacob Schiff, Lillian Wald's first major benefactor. Dr. Yanni researched the organization and its founder for her doctorate in sociology from Yale University. Let's welcome Dr. Yanni.
What could be better than being able to talk about one of my heroes? So the impetus behind this construction of this historical case study was related to the fact that I had heard many stories about how nursing complied with Medicare requirements and that there was a very poorly nuanced description of that. The closest that we might come to something that helped us was to explain how involved we are with the application of the Medicare in particular was the book that was written by Mary Mundinger, the former dean of the nursing school at Columbia, and she wrote a book called Home Care Controversy, Too Late, Too Little, Too Costly. And she said that, you know, nurses, in fact, were able to shape and form healthcare policy so that it would actually fit their understanding of what patients needed. And that, in fact, was my experience as well. So I don't have any relationships to disclose. And the groundwork behind the construction of this study was taken from policy analysis, from organizational theory, and from feminist theory. And so we start with this basic premise that when we look at policy, that it essentially is a manifestation of, you know, how the world should work. And by and large, we think of it as something that is shaped by the state and the professions. But we have to be careful about that because that's a kind of environmental determinism in that we say that it's these outside forces that are actually the ones that actually make the difference, when in fact you can see from the quote here that it really isn't just outside forces, that these policies end up trickling down into organizations, and then the question is how do those organizations make these policies work for their constituents. So it seemed to me that there were a number of different missing variables. And one of them was how do organizations exercise their own agency and interest when they're trying to understand how to make policy work. And the second was that because these were predominantly female organizations, which is what the initial form that nonprofits took, the question was how did the fact that they were female organizations also factor into the policy development? And as we said with policy, it reflects how the world should act, and so certainly both the external environment, namely the state and the professions, as well as the internal environment, is a gendered environment, which was not something that was often taken into consideration. And so, in my mind, the question was looking at these gendered organizations and understanding how they were able to act within the confines of what was defined as a something that women's work entailed. So when we go back, this was a piece of a larger study that I did where I actually looked at the implementation of AIDS care in the city of New York, but wanted to go back to the beginnings, which is where Lillian Wald comes in. And Lillian Wald was actually in this enviable position, if you would. She came of age during the progressive era, and women were starting to come into at least some awareness of what their roles were in society. And so when we look, though, it still was not a particularly expansive role, but when we look at the role that women were supposed to fill, they were supposed to fill this role of being moral mothers. We were seen as being non-political, so we could be the conscience of the society at that time. And we were also seen as being non-biased because we didn't have the vote, we were seen as being able to temper the self-interest of males in that particular society. And then on top of that, there was that whole issue of women being caregivers. And so to that end, women understood that they were more likely to make an impact on society if they kind of stuck to what it was that they were being told were their roles. So they went on to, in this era, start to develop female professions, and of course nursing was one of those professions that was developed in this era, and they, by definition, had to develop the profession differently because the professions were presumed to be male as well. The primary professions were seen as being law, medicine, university teaching, and the ministry. So these professions that women developed, and in fact they weren't even called professions, they were called demi or semi-professions. But what they did was they capitalized on what they saw as doing themselves as doing well. So they capitalized on what they considered to be a casework format. So unlike the male professions, they didn't strive to be in independent practice. The second thing that they did was they didn't see the knowledge that they actually held as being knowledge that they had to hoard. They saw it as being something that they shared, and they shared it by interpreting it to the individuals for whom they were serving. And then the third thing that they did was they didn't see themselves as objective and other. They saw themselves as very involved with reform and advocacy. So into this comes the female, then, not only the professions, but then also the female organizations. And, of course, this is Hull House, and this is Jane Addams. And these female professions that developed these female organizations tended to be flexible organizations. They valued the fact that they were individuals who were interfacing with not only each other, but with their constituents. They believed that individuals should be able to offer their suggestions as well, and they also very heavily valued personal relationships. And so the settlements, while they were started in England and they were started by college men, in the United States they actually were predominantly females. And they, as we'll see in the case of Lillian Wald, were actually kind of communal houses, if you would, as well. And so what you hear from Lillian Wald is that rather, well, she was the charismatic leader for this group of individuals, that she would sit down with all of her staff at breakfast in the morning, and they'd negotiate what was it that they were going to be doing that day. Okay, so Lillian Wald was really on a very different career path. I mean, many of us have heard the story about how she was actually a frustrated nurse on some level, and she was actually planning to go to medical school and somehow got deterred because she was asked to go out and manage an emergency. And as a result of that, she kind of found her passion and ended up deciding that she was going to develop this settlement house, which was the third settlement house in this area, and it was, interestingly enough, also non-sectarian. Up to this point, nurses had primarily been involved with religious organizations or benevolent organizations, and she really was very adamant that it be a non-sectarian. So what did she say about what it was that she was doing? Well, in addition to this quote, she said, "We were to live in the neighborhood as nurses, identify ourselves socially, and in brief, contribute to it our citizenship." And what she went on to say then was, "We try to imagine how loved ones for whom we might be solicitous would react were they in the place of patients whom we hope to serve." So she had a fairly clear vision about what it was that she wanted to serve. Karen Bueller Wilkerson, who was a great historian of this group of individuals, actually called them community mothers. And she talked about them as being trained and scientific representatives of the good neighbor, caring for all sick and well. So I was convinced that if I went to the roots of community health nursing, that I would find that Lillian Wald was sort of at the base of all of the other efforts that I had seen used in the community health nursing that I did. And I wanted to organize this schema. And so what I chose to look at the kind of work that she was doing was the schema that was presented by Oliver. And what basically this schema did was talked about the fact that depending upon where organizations were in their development, that they used less aggressive and more aggressive strategies to try and take policy and make it work at the organizational level. This also presumed that gender was a mediating variable in predicting the form and also in limiting the choice of variables that people have. So you can see on this first page, these are quieter, if you would, strategies. And I'm going to give you examples of some of these strategies in the development of the Henry Street settlement. And then as we go on to the next page, they get a little more strident. And again, what tended to happen was that the organization would, at the very beginning, typically be a little bit quieter, and then as it got more secure and it had more solvency and legitimacy, it got a little bit noisier. So what are some of the things that we see happening in this Henry Street settlement? Well, one of the first things that we see happening is that initially, in order to get this organization off the ground, Lillian Wald and the women with whom she worked actually had to figure out a way to get a wedge, if you would, in the practice setting. And so this was the period of time when hospitals were looking for patients who paid. And physicians were really looking to have fee-paying patients as well. And so what she did basically was she came along and said, okay, I understand what it is that you people want to do. What I'm going to do is I'm going to section off this group of individuals who you probably don't have a whole lot of interest in and won't argue with me about when I say that we're going to provide services for them. And so essentially that's what she did. And she did it in, again, a very shrewd and clever way where she talked about the fact that she understood that these hospitals really needed to save space for these individuals who desperately needed services, and she was going to keep people who didn't need those services out of hospitals. And that, in fact, is what she did. What she also did, though, was that she essentially set up a system of private nursing for those people who couldn't pay. Okay. So then she also got involved in concealing. At some point, she obviously couldn't stay just by pacifying, and because she saw such great need. So one of the things that she did was she was very, very careful because she needed supporters, because don't forget that the female organizations had to have benefactors because they weren't independent. And what she started to do then was she started to conceal when she wasn't doing what she knew people would not like. And so one example that we use here is the whole issue of birth control. She understood that the Roman Catholics at that time were very, very adamant about the nurses not being involved in birth control. And she basically said that, you know, she wasn't pushing people in that direction at the same time that she really knew that they were allowing their Protestant and Jewish women access to information to find out where they could get birth control. She also got to the point where she knew that she had a broader view of what was nursing, but she also understood that the role of women in that period of time was to nurse the sick poor. So she was very, very careful. She didn't get into any kind of extremes, but she slowly over time added more and more services and explained them as something that was being provided to this population of individuals. The other thing that she did, and this is really one of her many fine examples, is that she actually went to metropolitan life, and she thought, you know, we're never going to get anywhere if we don't have some kind of fee source. And she was able to convince metropolitan life in 1907 to actually hire these nurses to do essentially kind of case management. And to that end, then, she was able to move herself in the direction of having some resources that were not connected necessarily with her benefactors. Finally, though, I wanted to use as an example of the fact that while she was very shrewd and she really was a wonderful strategizer, that there were points at which she was not successful. And again, that point is this example. And this example is, oops, I don't know what I did, but, oh. this example is during right before World War I. She got very involved with a group of individuals who were going to try and dissuade the United States from entering World War I. And she really saw this as something that was related to the gendered role of women. She saw this as something that would, if we went into war, that we would divert interest and funds from social reform. And so she thought that this was well within the purview of women's roles. But in fact, she found otherwise. And as a result, she actually lost donors. Despite the fact that she did do a lot of backpedaling, and she did try and allow people to use her her offices in parts of New York as conscription centers, she ended up, though, having people say that basically this was not the role of nurses and of women. They were not to be shaping national policy. They were non-voting, and they were overstepping their bounds. So I guess the moral of the story for me is that we come from this wonderful and illustrious background of not settling with the status quo. Obviously, Waltz left us a wonderful legacy. I mean, she was very involved with many, many things. And what she did for the Visiting Nurse Service of New York was left them a legacy of solvency and legitimacy, and so they continue into today. The Chinese character, I'm told, is we are all one family. This is one of the symbols that is on a lot of the Visiting Nurse Services of New York's materials. And she did this, as I said, in this wonderful way where she was able to keep people very interested in her organization and also to convince people that what she was doing was extremely valuable. So we're going to be moving forward in history.